May it please the court, counsel. The Federal Tort Claims Act is a limited waiver of sovereign immunity. The plain language of the statute says that an action under it shall not be instituted for any sum in excess of the sum certain stated on the administrative claim.
What's the purpose of that rule?
The purpose of the rule is to give both parties, the United States and the plaintiff, the exact same information when they're trying to negotiate. Congress limited the exception to sovereign immunity and wanted to be able to give the parties equal bargaining positions. There is really no use for the sum certain requirement if parties can come in and underestimate their claims.
And then what? Can overestimate, you mean?
Yeah, well, overestimating the claim is fine because then the United States knows actually what its full liability range could be.
I don't understand why it's here. I don't get it.
Well, Congress expects rational actors to be able to come in and negotiate in the administrative process, and in fact, has set up the administrative process.
So the only effect of this rule is that unless you're represented by an incompetent lawyer, you'll ask for, you know, $100 million. Is there any penalty for grossly exaggerating your damages?
Well, there's not necessarily a penalty, but the SF-95,
which is... Not necessarily a penalty.
Well,
is there a penalty or is there not a penalty?
The administrative claim form requires that the claim be supported by competent evidence and that there be physician statements attached to the form to support the claim. So it's unlikely that somebody would come in and ask for $1 billion unless they had competent evidence to back it up. Congress assumed rational actors, and that's what...
So then there has to be, surely, built into this, as the case would suggest, a doctrine that allows the plaintiff to get more if at the time that she filed her claim, the full extent of her injury was unknown.
If there is newly discovered evidence that a reasonable person could not discover at the time of the claim, or there's intervening facts. Those are the only two exceptions, and they're very narrow.
Well, they're here in this case, though. I mean, one of the things, aside from what I regard as your misstatement of the standard of review after the Pullman standard against Quint case, but one of the things that's troublesome is that despite the fact that she was under treatment by a variety of doctors for her physical ailments, not a single one of these doctors seems to have put down an actual diagnosis on the form that rule out mental illness, rule out depression, whatever. One sees nothing about this from trained medical professionals up to the time of the administrative claim. And it seems to me a bit extraordinary to think that the person whose mind is in question should nonetheless have the mental clarity to self-diagnose a mental illness. I don't see any evidence, in other words, in this record on the mental side of things up to the time of the administrative claim that suggests that the government's position is well taken.
Two responses. First, Your Honor, she never sought the type of medical treatment that she would
right.
need to seek to get that diagnosis.
No. Other doctors, if you went to an internist is a primary care physician, and if the internist thought that what you were really suffering from was a mental illness, the internist would refer you to a qualified psychiatrist or psychologist. That's the step that never happened.
But
a lot of people don't know what kind of doctor they should go to, even if they have a physical problem, much less a mental problem.
First of all, on that point, the court did actually find that Dr. Torrance, her internist, strongly suggested that she seek psychological counseling. She turned it down. Second, the psychological injuries in this case are so severe, so persistent, and so obvious to lay people.
Well, now they are, but as of the time of the administrative claim, she was suffering from a great number of physical problems. The district court found as a fact that she thought reasonably that her state of mind was just a normal reaction to the intense pain and all the other physical problems that she had that I won't spell out right here. That's a finding of fact.
And it's clearly erroneous based on the evidence that was presented.
I don't see how it could be.
The court and Ms. Zerba. I mean, Ms. Zerba comes in and testifies, and the court finds her credible, but her life is completely changed after the accident. She can't walk anywhere alone. She can't drive. She can't fly. She can't go anywhere unescorted. She's got fears she never had before.
But the question is that mental illness? You know, the government is very happy to argue in Social Security disability cases that no one on the planet's mentally ill. Then, you know, you're turning around here and saying that she should have realized that she had crossed over that line from simply being unhappy, which many people are from time to time without rushing off to a psychiatrist, and being mentally ill.
What we're saying is that a reasonable person in her position should have discovered this and could have discovered it, and that's what the statute says.
A reasonable mentally ill person?
No, a reasonable person in her position.
That's what you're saying she is. A reasonably mentally ill person should have understood that they were mentally ill.
No, we're saying a reasonable person who's got psychological injuries of some sort or another. Her diagnosis is not that she's mentally ill such that she cannot function and she cannot make decisions or recognize it her condition. Her diagnosis is that she's got a psychological ailment, and that could reasonably have been discovered at the time of her accident.
You agree it wasn't discovered?
No, we think that it was discovered, and that it could reasonably have been discovered by her if she had just taken the opportunity to do so.
I see it differently. I just see it as a case in which the gravity of her problems was not recognized. Look, what if happens if someone breaks his leg? So he asks for, you know, $50,000 damages because he's broke his leg, no big deal. But then suppose the leg never heals, never sets. So, you know, he ends up unable to walk. Now, wouldn't he be able to ask for additional damages?
Not necessarily. Only if he meets the conditions.
Then you're in a different universe.
Well, think about the Michaels case. In the Michaels case, he injured his hip and his knee, and he asked for a sum certain on his administrative claim to account for the healing or the setting of his hip and his knee. Later on, he developed necrosis and arthritis that completely incapacitated him. That is an intervening event.
What's this intervening event? No, it's not an intervening event. It's just that if you break your leg, you don't know what's going to happen. Probably it'll be set and you'll be fine, but there's some probability that you'll have, you know, necrosis or some other hideous complication. In other words, the consequences of the broken leg may turn out to be more serious than you expected, in which event you can ask for more money, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So why isn't this case? Let me finish my question. She starts off, and of course you expect after this serious automobile accident that there'll be some, you know, emotional distress associated with it. But later it turns out that it's really much more severe. It's so severe that you can actually call it, if you want, a mental illness. But it's just more severe than was reasonably anticipated when she was injured. So she asked for more damages. What's wrong with that?
But that's not what happens here. What happens here is that immediately following the accident, she had severe, persistent signs of psychological injuries. Immediately she was afraid.
But I think probably everybody has that who's in a serious accident. And most people most people snap out of it. She didn't. So it's just like the failure to have a normal recovery from a broken leg.
Her persistent crying, constant anxiety, constant fears did not let up any time in the 17 months between her accident and the time she filed her administrative claim. People that she trusted, including her internist, were suggesting that she seek psychological counseling. All the facts were there in the exact same severity for the entirety of that 17 months. She just refused to take advantage of them and recognize them for what they were. The standard is that it needs to be reasonably discoverable. It was reasonably discoverable for her to realize she had a psychological injury such that she should have included it in the sum certain on her claim. I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Noller. Mr. Mullen?
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. I represent Lucy Zerba. Judge Cannelli was presented with 253 separate disputed facts by the parties.
Well, Ms. Noller just gave a good summary of her position, so what is it that's wrong with it?
The fact that Judge Cannelli evaluated the testimony of 11 separate witnesses, including...
But, I mean, why wouldn't 17 months, as she just said, why wouldn't 17 months be enough to realize that you weren't going to have a normal recovery from this accident, and you should ask for more damages?
Judge Cannelli found that it was reasonable for the plaintiff not to be aware of the problems that she was experiencing. The medical testimony by both the plaintiff through Dr. Hartman, a board-certified psychologist, as well as by the government's retained witness, board-certified psychiatrist Dr. Johanna, indicated that Ms. Zerba could not have been expected to self-diagnose her problems. There was no testimony that she personally was aware of any of the emotional problems that she had.
Well, I don't understand you. How can one be unaware of one's emotional problems? One may be unaware of the official name for them or their persistence, but obviously you're aware. I don't see why wouldn't the lawyer who is preparing her? She did have a lawyer, right?
When she prepared. She did at that time.
So why doesn't the was it you?
No.
Well, why doesn't she, when she, so if a law, in a lawyer in a personal injury case, obviously, you know, interviews the client, and the client tells them everything that's bothering her, including all this emotional distress. So it seems to me I don't know why he didn't ask for more.
I suggest to the court, Your Honor, first of all, there's no evidence as to what that lawyer was thinking at the time, but I believe
Well, maybe he committed malpractice. I don't understand why a lawyer wouldn't err on the side of, and what she said, one thing she said about, you know, you have to support your claim with a doctor's certificate. That's not right, because you can seek emotional damages for emotional injury without having any kind of medical certificate about it. That's not a medical item of damages.
I suggest to the court that Judge Cannelli's analysis was correct in that.
Well, you're not answering my question. Why didn't the lawyer ask for more?
I can't speak to the lawyer not asking for more money, Your Honor. I suspect that he was unaware, just like the plaintiff was, of the extent.
I don't know how you can be unaware of the fact that you're experiencing psychological distress. Let's say you may not know the name of your ailment or that it is an ailment, but you know you're unhappy and you connect it to the accident. And you tell your lawyer, and the lawyer, you know, computes accordingly.
Dr. Hartman addressed this very issue, Your Honor, and Judge Cannelli evaluated the testimony of Dr. Hartman, who made it very clear that in light of the physical problems that Ms. Zerba was experiencing, she established a number of coping mechanisms to deal with the physical injuries.
Could I just ask you, speaking of the physical injuries, between the time of the accident and the time of the filing of the administrative claim, she has, you know, the initial treatment at Northwestern, she has the gallbladder operation, she develops, she has the irritable bowel syndrome. And I thought that the gist of this testimony was that although she was, of course, not very happy during that period of time, she thought these were all consequences of the physical. In other words, the physical problems hadn't let up yet.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So
actually, they persist to today's date. Judge Cannelli looked at that and found, as the court pointed out, that the physical injuries were clouding her ability to deal with any emotional problems or even recognize the fact that she had emotional problems.
Okay, let me ask you another thing. It's a matter of law. Are we distinguishing here between what we'd call, you know, pain and suffering or the kind of emotional damages that you'd throw in with a tort claim on the one hand, and on the other hand, actual mental illness problems where you might be submitting physician bills for psychiatrist or psychologist visits and other kinds of, you know, perhaps medications or other therapy-related things? Are these two different categories of damage?
Pain and suffering can be both physical as well as emotional. Judge Cannelli evaluated that and segregated the physical from the emotional when assigning a value to the pain and suffering that Ms. Zerba experienced in the past and will undoubtedly experience
right.
in the future.
Right. See, what I'm getting at is in filing the original administrative claim, I think that somebody would have a pain and suffering component for the kind of serious automobile accident that Ms. Zerba had, but if they didn't have some kind of documentation from a mental health professional, could they also, would that be something that would be subsumed within pain and suffering, or is that a different kind of item of damage?
We could speculate that one may have something that would lead to suicide ideation and death. That's not what we were talking about here.
Well, maybe you don't understand why I'm asking this question. The whole point is, did she ask for enough? Could she have asked for $1 million just for the heck of it, on the theory that maybe all of this incessant crying was really because of the kind of mental illness that really would require professional treatment over some period of time, maybe 2 years, maybe whatever period?
Yes, if there was a recognition of that problem, I think that the attorney who prepared the claim probably was attempting to evaluate the physical injuries and was unaware of the emotional component being a separate and distinct problem.
Because no doctor had ever diagnosed, no, it's not in any of the physician notes yet, right?
That's correct. The only time
that this... It's such incompetence, because a person who sues for, who's injured in an accident and sues, is suing for physical injury, medical bills, so forth, lost earnings, what have you, but also pain and suffering, physical or mental. You don't need a diagnosis or anything, right?
So if one is aware of that component...
I don't understand what you talk about awareness of components. Obviously, a person knows if she is suffering physically or mentally, right?
Not necessarily, and that's what Dr. Hartman and Dr. Yohano talked about. That's the evidence.
If you tell your lawyer, you know, ever since this accident I've been miserable, the lawyer says, great, we'll ask for $500,000 in mental suffering.
If the lawyer is aware that there's emotional problems separate and distinct from an outgrowth of the physical problems, I would agree.
You're talking gibberish, I must say. It doesn't have to be separate, distinct, or anything like that. The point is, you just add up all the different elements of damage, mental, physical, medical, earnings, and you make some guess as to the maximum that, you know, a jury might or a judge might award. That's what you do, and it doesn't have to have a label or a doctor's certificate or anything like that.
One could wildly speculate as to what a judge or a jury may award for a similar injury as Ms. Zerba experienced.
Is there a penalty for that?
There is not, Your Honors. In other words, as counsel pointed out, one could put $1 billion on the form the government requires to be filed with the administrative agency. But that is not the purpose of the statute. The statute is to give the government fair notice of the fact that someone has been injured and the type of injuries that that person is aware of that date. Congress has made very clear under 2675D that there are two exceptions, both of which were addressed by Judge Kennelly, both of which he concluded, based upon his findings of fact, which are not even close to being clearly erroneous, that Ms. Zerba's case fit both exceptions. That is, that the problems that she experienced and that he awarded compensation for were not reasonably discoverable at the time she filed the claim, as well as the fact that as of the date that she filed the claim, things got alarmingly worse.
But this $300,000, does that include, do you think, a component for emotional suffering?
All I can say, Your Honor, is that the pain and suffering that I believe was addressed within the claim was for the problems that she was experiencing for disability, for her disfigurement as of that date.
He seems to have separated them. He has psychiatric care in a different line from physical pain and suffering, and then he has a different line again for emotional pain and suffering. So he has separated them out.
He did, Your Honor.
Different categories.
He did, Your Honor, and that's because that's what the evidence was before Judge Kennelly. He evaluated the physical injuries and the emotional injuries.
That's what I'm saying. Judge Kennelly, I'm looking at Judge Kennelly's order in the appendix, and Judge Kennelly's order winds up by saying, in sum, the court awards damages in the following amounts, and he breaks it down into five categories. And I'm just saying, we've been discussing pain and suffering as opposed to medical care, for example, and he has one line for physical pain and suffering that he's keeping within that $300,000 cap, and he has a different line for emotional pain and suffering.
That's correct, Your Honor. He segregated the two. And that's because that's what the testimony was, and that's what his findings were. It was an appropriate conclusion based upon his findings, and I would ask the court to affirm.
Now, some of that emotional pain and suffering was incurred in that 17-month period between the accident and the filing of the administrative claim.
There is no doubt
wasn't
that she
it?
Was experiencing some emotional problems.
Well, isn't that in the $238,000?
That would be a part of that, Your Honor, and that goes up to the $300,000. Judge Cannelli's award was approximately $250,000 for the pain, for the physical problems that she was experiencing, and then an additional award up to $520,000, which was purely for emotional problems. So I suggest that any award during that 17 months prior to the time of the filing of the administrative claim was addressed up to the $300,000.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mullen. Ms. Noller, how much time does she have? 3 minutes?
A couple of points. Zerba is not delusional. She is somebody who was never delusional through the entire process. The day after the accident, however, she had immediate anxiety, immediate crying, immediate fears that she had never had in her normal life before the accident. And it was severe and persistent, and it lasted the entire duration of the 17 months before the time she filed her administrative claim. It was apparent to other lay people, not just the physicians who treated her, her boyfriend, her sister with whom she lived for the 6 months following the accident, testified that they told Zerba, please get counseling, this is affecting your mental state. They also told her, or they also described how she would say to them, I can't go anywhere without anybody. I'm crying all the time. She would go home from work crying. This is stuff that never happened to her before the accident.
If she had asked for the $550 at the outset, after 17 months, we wouldn't be here, I guess, right?
I apologize.
$550,000 or $600,000, if that had been the claim instead of $300,000, there'd be no problem. We wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here.
Well, the reason we're here is that this is an important legal issue. And
yeah, but it seems that the legal issue is that if once you establish a ceiling, we got you. And so the ceiling, anybody that puts a ceiling that's anywhere near what it should be is nuts.
Not necessarily. If there are facts, new facts that are not reasonably discoverable.
No. You're not following, Judge. Judge Mannion's question is, suppose that the lawyer had requested an administrative claim $550,000, and then the judge awards, as we know, $519,000. So you'd have no basis for an appeal, would you?
No, we would not, Your Honor. This is a situation where the claim is entirely unspecific. The $300,000 may account for and may include the psychological injuries. We don't know. But what we do know is that all of the injuries that Judge Cannelli awarded damages for were reasonably discoverable at the time she filed her administrative.
You said earlier that you said in your opening argument that there is some kind of control on asking for, you know, millions of dollars because you have to attach your doctor's certificate or something. But that isn't true if you're asking for emotional. For pain and suffering, physical or emotional, there's no doctor's certificate there. You just throw in a number.
What the claim form says is the amount claimed should be substantiated by competent evidence as follows, and then it gives some examples. One of the examples is a doctor's note. But you're correct that it does not say if you're claiming pain and suffering, you have to delineate exactly what it is.
So this lawyer just made a serious mistake. That's what it amounts to. Her original lawyer made a serious mistake.
It's tough to tell from the evidence that's in the record. She asked for $300,000, and it should include the pain and suffering she was experiencing up to the time she filed her administrative claim, which did not subside at any time after the accident.
Okay, thank you very much
to
both counsel.